Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's on it?
Could you pull?
Could I? What?
And you?
What do you mean?
Pull. Just
pull to open.
Pull to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
Disrupts the brain.
It's like it's been buried in my head for years.
Keeps everything calm.
And I won't change their mind.
Because I'm always so certain.
Well, no more opinionated than usual.
Moments like these are a joy.
Don't just stand there. Push.
Here comes the...
Hello.
Hello,
and welcome to Pull to Open. Normally, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who in random order. But today, we're splitting off.
That's better. Oof.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. We have bi-generated.
Yeah, I felt strangely out of sync there before we did that.
Yeah, that was weird. But that's because we're splitting off. Everything is weird, and we're
everything
both
is weird.
Everything is right. We all win. All our opinions are correct, and especially our opinions about the giggle. I was going to ask you to do the arpeggio, but you did it. You did it.
Come on, how could I not? Actually, whenever someone says giggle now, if they're a Doctor Who fan, you're going to, that's what you're going to get.
I'm going to have to re-sculpt my whole giggle. And of course, we have to re-sculpt the entirety of Doctor Who canon now that we know the bi-generation is a thing. And
do we ever?
Yes. Do we want to talk about that regeneration first? Should we get right into it?
I don't know if I have the energy at this point. I feel like if Tennant's Doctor was staggering through things and running on fumes, I'm kind of feeling that way myself now. I finished watching this less than a half hour ago. And I am still processing it, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about this a week from now, a month from now, 6 months from now. But my lack of certainty right now, I think, means I didn't love it. You know, I'm not cheering. I'm not like going, whoa, yeah, that's awesome. It's like, okay. You know, he kind of forewarned us a little bit, like, this is going to be big. This is going to change things. So I knew he wasn't going for something conventional. There's obviously this is Russell T. Davies, what he was saying. And now I've seen it and I don't know if I love it. And maybe talking about it will help.
Yeah.
So first of all, let me ask you, Chris, what did you think of the whole bi-generation thing?
I loved it. Now, to be honest, I was spoiled in the sense that I knew that that was the rumor. And the friend I was watching with, also a Doctor Who fan, came up with it independently. She said, you know, this is maybe Tennant's going to stay, right? Is that what's going to happen? So obviously it didn't come out of the wild blue yonder, as it were. We sort of had the practice for this with the Meta Crisis, right? Tennant going on in and existing in some other form, in some other universe. In this case, that universe just happens to be London.
Well, yes, we did sort of have a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a setup, but it's definitely an echo of the Meta Crisis. I mean, you could have gone the traditionalist route. Like, think of the options he had. He could have just, you know, Tennant regenerates into Gatwa, off we go, and we're done with that. And that that doesn't feel right either, because as we were talking about, you know, even I was saying in Wild Blue Yonder, we only have one more adventure with these guys. And I was already like wistfully like, oh man, I wish I could see more adventures with this Tennant and Donna. And
they're going to get them.
apparently they can bring them back clearly whenever they want. Now, I don't know if I wanted that though. You know, like I feel like, oh, now there's, you know, I finished the cake. I love the cake. Oh, I wish there was more cake. Well, look, there's a whole room full of cakes. And it's like,
you want a corridor. You've got room after room of corridor after corridor. Every door leads to a corridor.
And but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if having is this as rewarding as wanting, which could be. I don't know if that was the point of this episode. Probably not. But I mean, it, now that I have it, I'm just like, oh, okay. Right. Got it.
Well, I got to say that the champagne corks are probably popping over at Big Finish HQ. David Tennant and Catherine Tate have done their big finishes before. This would certainly inspire them to do more. Big Finish does endeavor to make it as easy as possible. So I do think we're going to get a whole line of 14th Doctor adventures.
Well, maybe. Here's the okay. Like, I don't want to get too far on a tangent here, but you think about like Big Finish is actually kind of a good example of what I'm talking about, because they've gotten more popular, they've gotten bigger, they've gotten more cast, and they've started in the last few years creatively putting companions with doctors and just kind of. Kind of almost doing whatever. Let's just do a story because we have this available talent. To which there's a certain degree of robbing meaning from the whole thing once they become these cast parties, right? And that's kind of what I'm getting at. The same feeling of like, oh, now that there's a bi-generation and we have these two TARDISes, two doctors, and they can kind of go and do off whatever, whenever. It's a little like, well, isn't this kind of cheapening the whole endeavor on some level? Like, shouldn't there be some consistency, more rules to it than that? I don't know. Maybe call me a stickler, call me a traditionalist. You're probably going to call me something worse, everyone else who's listening who love the episode. But I kind of want something a little more, I wouldn't say gritty and realistic, but I don't know, consistent, I guess. A little more, something I can grip onto, you know, and a little more tangible in terms of like the meaning that it has. And I'm talking both about the episode and what it means for all of Doctor Who, right? Like, that's what I think. Like, because we're getting what we want. We're getting like, oh, yay, we have both doctors and all this stuff. But now, because there hasn't been that sacrifice that always happens at the end of one of these, it's tough. It's tough. It's a tough place to be. Cause like, did I want this? That's kind of where I'm going.
It does have that feel of RTD didn't want to lose his favorite doctor. He didn't want to lose Tennant. And we've seen that in the past. Like, RTD does love his characters and he does like to bring them back, and he does have a hard time killing them for good. And Rose is trapped in another dimension, but oh wait, she's got a dimension cannon. The dimensions happen to be clashing together. So Rose is back, y'all. But I should say that I do think, and I haven't checked the RTD commentary on iPlayer that he said we should all go listen to after it. It does seem, I'm seeing a few tweets pop up about it as we're recording this, because we're doing this pretty much live after it goes out, and everyone's kind of getting their brain around it. It does seem that RTD is saying that he will regenerate into 15 properly at some point, and that what the toy maker has done is actually pull 15 out of the future, and maybe that's why Mel's there, you know. Mel herself pulled out of her future companionship with the doctor, and we never got to see the actual beginning.
Okay, well, interesting. Maybe. Interesting. Okay, that's new information for me.
Yeah,
but
if that's true, I mean, I don't take that to the bank. But yeah, you know, there are ways around this, right?
Listen,
you can explain it without saying that 14 lives forever.
Well, I'm just going to say two more things about it, and then I think we can go on to sort of the other stuff about the episode. So one is that I really thought this is a nitpick, but one of the things that takes me a little more out of it is that the regeneration makes even less physical sense than it usually does, right? Which I get it. It's Doctor Who, and I know, again, I've talked about this before. I don't want to go down the whole thing of what's suspension of disbelief and what isn't, but I would say, you know, I'm going to go a little bit down it because this one is like, okay, well, they bi-generate, and one gets the undershirt, one gets the shirt, and one gets the tie, one gets the pants, and it's like, yeah, you kind of have to do that, but it's like, if I was thinking about it during the episode, because, you know, because you're seeing Shurigatwa in his underwear, and you're just like, well, how did that work? You know what I mean? Like, and I know they already like regenerated the clothes, and that, you know, Doctor Who does magic stuff. I get it. You don't want to stop and explain it, but so someone regenerating every cell in their body wearing the same clothes, that's a little more real to me. And I know, again, I sound ridiculous. It's Doctor Who, but it is like there are degrees to this kind of thing, you know? So sorry for the nitpick, but I had to get that out.
I'm glad you got it out. I think we want to represent all opinions. We now know for a fact, according to the giggle, all opinions are correct.
And I'm standing by mine.
Yeah, that's
I'm going
right.
to throw you off this podcast, Chris.
Everyone else has just gone completely balmy and just has these dead set opinions, but not me.
Well, that's a good transition. I'll save my other maybe pick about it for later. It's not even really a pick, but it's more like when I said the word sacrifice, that activated something in my brain, which I think is like, oh yeah, sacrifice. That's kind of like that kind of gives stories meaning. And when you duplicate people like this, there's sort of an ontological thing which they hint at here. But I remember other things that do it well, whether it's cloning or whatever, recognize you sort of don't get something for nothing, right? Mm. That you may be able to clone someone, but not all is good, and usually there's something that is sacrificed in creating that duplicate in some way.
Yes.
So anyway,
indeed.
Maybe that's to come.
Maybe it is to come. Maybe we've yet to see the end of 14 officially regenerating to 15. It could still happen. Why not have the regeneration twice? I will say I think it is brilliant in the sense that it was set up that we've seen that image of Shuti saying, will someone tell me what the hell is going on? First of all, not aware that he wasn't wearing pants at the time. but secondly, it's in plain sight. He is wearing Tennant's shirt and Tennant's tie.
Right.
And not undershirt, right? So it's, I like that setup. Like, it did take me a while to realize, like, wait a minute, why is he in his pants? And like, and then you have the other thought, which may occur to some of us more than others in a given lifetime. I wonder if David Tennant's going commando. And yes, I believe, I don't know if RTD is yet to confirm that, but I'm taking that one to the bank. That's headcanon. Shuti got the underwear. Tennant got
the pants. It was literally, see, it gets you thinking. Did we want to think about these things? I don't know if we did.
You know what I like here? So RTD is shamelessly stealing from a lot of stuff. He's shamelessly stealing from the Curse of Fatal Death, I believe, with the eyebrow language. Right.
That's, well, that was actually, you remember, it was in Spearhead from Space too. I was surprised he didn't say Delphon, because that was the planet, but they said the queen of something else, which isn't necessarily the planet, but I figured that would have been an obvious name to drop, but they didn't for some reason.
Yes. Yeah, so we replete with references, by the way, the whole thing, incredibly so.
Well, let's talk about one of the big ones, which was right there in front of us. Mel,
yes.
Yeah. She's back early.
We got a mention of Sabalon Glitz, who died.
That's right. Well, you had to explain it.
Mm-hmm. So, but like just the word Sabalon Glitz, I'm sure RTD just loved typing that. Just he loved typing the words Mavic Chen. Like, this was definitely a feast of shout outs with all the old Who fans pointing at the screen like the Leo DiCaprio meme. I recognize that. Also, by the way, I love that he stole shamelessly from himself and from Flash Gordon. Right.
Oh,
picking up the tooth that the master is trapped in.
Oh yeah.
Is exactly.
Okay. What I'm can't say I'm super up to speed on Flash Gordon. But
at the end of Flash Gordon, Ming is dead, or he vanishes, and then a hand comes out and plucks his ring, and at the same time, you hear Ming's laughter echoing in the background as we kick into the Queen soundtrack.
Oh, I just assumed he was just referencing himself the one prior to that, when he came back, but it was the Last of the Time Lords.
The Last of the Time Lords.
Yeah.
Yeah, which in itself was a Flash reference. I think it was more of a Flash reference this time because he added the laughter.
Yeah.
But there's also a reference to Inspector Spacetime from Community. This is getting super nerdy, but the big crux point of the Community episode where they've got the fan convention that Troy and Arbet are going to, if you know Community, is who are they going to take the photo of the Inspector and Reggie? It's basically the Inspector and his companion, and they're bifurcated. I think they actually say it in the show, they're bifurcated. So everyone's taking a special photo where they're kind of merged into one person, and they're like pulling apart from each other, exactly like Tennant and Shooty. Exactly.
Oh my god!
Same.
So it sounds like he lifted his reference. Massive twist to the story and the Doctor Who universe from Community.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I've never seen
Spacetime.
That. Wow, that's crazy. Well, listen, I want to get into some more references, and I definitely want to talk about Mel. I definitely want to talk about the Toymaker. But before we do that, Chris, how about we do some housekeeping?
Yeah, let's do that. So, Pull to Open is a podcast. It's also a website, pulltoopen.net. It's a Patreon. It's on every social network that you can possibly imagine, and some that you haven't. And you know what? It's correct on all of them. Pete, what are the correct handles for?
We're at Pull to Open on TikTok and Blue Sky, I want to say. Yes. Yeah. And Pull to Open 63 on pretty much everything else. Please leave a review if you can. So if you're in a podcast app, chances are it might be Spotify or the Apple Podcast app. If you could rate us with a star rating, I'm seeing 5 stars in front of me for some reason, but go ahead and leave whatever you want. And reviews in the Apple Podcast app really do help the show.
Yes.
And they're all correct. All opinions are correct.
All correct. And you know what? If you've reviewed us once, do it again, because you know what? The oldest rule in the universe is best out of three.
Exactly. Apparently. So, okay, let's talk about Mel a little bit. So Mel's great. We like Mel. It's fun that I like that they just sort of had this quick explanation that she just hitched a ride back. Sabalom Glitz lived to be 100 or something.
101.
So he must have been younger, I guess. So I mean, Mel, obviously she's older now, presumably.
It's all that characters.
There it is.
The giggle was just entirely secretly a PSA for characters.
Yeah. Well, I also like that her story wasn't super awesome. Like she kind of, you know, came back, kind of just didn't have a lot going on, and then just, you know, okay, like got a job at UNIT. So, so that's all to the good. And what I really want to talk about is Neil Patrick Harris as the Toymaker.
Oh,
and I thought, like I've already said, there's certain parts of the story I'm not sure how I feel about. I loved her performance and like really everything Davies did here with him, really. Like I thought it was a really, really great interpretation of what he is, how he would sort of behave now in this sort of more modern world. And even though they were more or less superficial, the points he was making about, you know, society and culture and everyone being online and playing games. And I love when he talks about head games and mind games and that he's fallen in love with humanity. All of that was amazing. So good.
Yes. He loves us because of our cheating and our ghosting and our, you know, our deceiving and he basically loves our social media. Good God. Could an episode have got more close to the bone about like what, ails the world today, right? Everyone being right, everyone shouting at each other that they're the reasonable one and everyone else is wrong, and you know, cut to the Prime Minister. That's a wonderful scene of the Donna's.
Yeah, I like the way of thinking about that. Like, everybody wins. And I think, you know, you don't have to think too hard about it, but I do like that sort of point making of, look, someone's got to lose for us to make progress in anything, you know?
And someone actually has to be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's got to be wrong out there, which is, you know, it's a simple point, but it works really, really well. And I also like that is plausibly a way the world would just fall into chaos and a plausible motivation for the toy maker. So absolutely, all of that really works. So, okay, I want to get into some of the details. Like, I really, really liked the marionette stuff, not just the stuff with the guy who was his prisoner, but the stuff where he was talking about Amy and Clara and Bill and going in and out of his accent at the perfect times. Those little close-ups of Neil Patrick Harris going, well, that's all right then. You know, like
in American accent. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right then. Yeah. I mean, it just like a sardonic internet commenter, just jumping in at those moments. And of course, he's absolutely right. I mean, at its best, the show does play with this notion of like the Doctor messes people up, and you know, being with the Doctor messes people up. And
oh my God, I don't think he's even like, if you look at all of New Who companions, is he even batting 500 on them being okay and back home? You know, like I don't think he is.
You know, Martha's kind of okay, but also will never be the same again. Like she's not didn't exactly just go back to her life as a doctor in the hospital. You know, she had to go work for UNIT and run around, blow things up.
Yeah, Amy no, Clara no.
Yeah.
And most of, I guess, the Whitaker companions made out okay.
What I really loved about that scene was that I think if you are enough of a Doctor Who fan, you're doing exactly what the Doctor does at that moment. So you're like, and I did it. I was saying the sort of the mitigating reasons out loud, like when he did the Amy Pond thing. And she touched a weeping angel and then she dies. And I was yelling at the screen, but in her 80s, which the Doctor is like, but she had a full life. Like, we're apologists for him, which is kind of a very creepy revelation that the giggle has. Yes, like you, I loved Neil Patrick Harris. If there are any listeners in Germany, I wanted to say on behalf of the English-speaking Who fan world, we're so sorry.
The thing is, we're sorry, not sorry, I have to say, because, well, this is the thing. He seemed like, I think he might be a fan of Pull to Open in terms of, like, Davies, right? Because, like, the way he wrote him, like, these sort of, he didn't forget about the racism, you know, he just made it subtler, and, like, it sort of weaves in, like, he's just, you know, he weaves in and out of the accent. He just uses these conventions to kind of one-up people, like when he has that comment about the guy's skin or whatever. He doesn't even say about the skin color. It's like, you're more used to tropical climates, aren't you? Yeah. Or something like that. It was, you know, ooh, that's slimy. And yeah, like all of that stuff, I think really, really worked. Just this whole dance sequence through UNIT, like I gotta wonder like how long that took to shoot and how much confetti they ended up throwing on the floor. Like, my God, that was just brilliant. But it's also
so good. Yeah. You got to look back, by the way, on the master singing Rasputin from Daleks and Cybermen last year and say that next to this, like that was nothing. That was just the warm up act, because this takes that to new extreme. You know, there's so much more of the song. It's like moves to every bit, you know, he dances with Kate. You know, he does the American Beauty thing in the rose petals. Lovely little reference there to a great movie.
You kind of almost wanted more of that. I gotta say, like, it's so good, and I would have loved to seen honestly one more set piece, because they arguably two, right? Because there's in the arena control room and then there's the big gun, but I almost wanted a little more of like the play world, the almost the Roger Rabbit world that he's sort of creating, because you get a hint of that where he spins Mel. And she does it in sort of almost this cartoony way and falls down, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and you could argue the bi generation might have been a product of that. I think that's a strong implication that at least they're saying here, you know. So there's this weird cartoonification that takes over when he's there. And I kind of just, you know, wanted, like, because other shows have done things like this, right? Like, I kind of wanted almost a little more there of showing and them also kind of working out the rules of it. That, oh, I can, you know, another great example, Spider-Verse with Spider-Ham, you know, like when you're around him, he gets to do things like pull things out of other things that are impossibly big and do weird stuff. Right, like, but everyone else sort of has to be a little more realistic, right? Like, so, like that kind of
thing. Pulls out at the end the hammer that Shooty pulls
exactly.
out, exactly. And the TARDIS into two TARDI. TARDIS says, yes, it's TARDIS says, isn't it? Unless the whole Mavity thing has changed more words than we knew. I think TARDIS says is the plural. Yes, he creates two TARDISes with a big cartoon hammer, which is exactly what you're talking about. But actually, now, based on what you're saying, I'm thinking. My goodness, like we need something like that, like almost a mind robber-esque kind of let's dip into the cartoon universe. Let's have the Doctor Who version of Roger Rabbit where he goes somewhere where like animation is live and can interact with them, which would be such a great reference.
And I think there was a missed opportunity to do something more with the game. So, and this is where the one thing that I didn't like about the storyline was honestly that final game of Catch, where I like the simplicity of it as well as the simplicity of Cut.
Yes.
Both of those work. I thought the Cut worked better than the Catch, and I'll explain why. So the Catch, it's a little too like, open-ended, you know, they're just throwing the ball at each other, but you know, it's still too open-ended. The toy maker, he's a super being. Like, if he really wants to win, why doesn't he just throw it like at a million miles an hour? Right. And he kind of does and he kind of doesn't. Like so in other words, I feel like there's still too much in terms of rules he can manipulate there to believably lose that game. And he does seemingly lose just randomly. Like, I wish there was a little more story there. I wish they had sort of figured out some way to have the doctors maybe somehow use the cartoon nature of this place in some way, you know, kind of like, you know, the Space Jam movies do things like this.
Yeah.
And then maybe figure out a way to win.
Mel could have distracted him by singing a high C or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like, yes, I see what you're saying. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I they were simple games, like you said, specifically because the games in the Celestial Toymaker were so rubbish.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I think there should almost be a realization that you can't win against the Toymaker because he's just too good at the game. That's what he strongly implies, right? Like, I've beaten every being from everyday people to like gods. And I've trapped them all, and I'm always the winner. And it makes sense because he's obviously this crazy super being and would know like any strategy game he'd be able to outmaneuver you. Any other game that, you know, where the rules are, he should be able to just, you know, adjust the rules so he wins. But a game like that is this straight up high card. Like if he's actually playing by some sort of rules, he can't. Like that's sort of the realization. That's why Cut makes sense. It's like, okay, it's completely random. Like, you know, like it's basically like it's, you know, 50% chance, well, you or me, like that's it. And that's the only game you can, like a coin flip is all you can win against the toy maker. And you only have a chance to win. You can't guarantee a win. So, so that's good. But the ball thing,
game, and he'll just speed it up on you. The ball thing, perhaps a bit too basic. I do think you need something more action-y than just a card game, but yeah, there are other ways that could have been done. You know, it's not perfect in that respect, but I think, I mean, at that stage, you are just so trying to comprehend what has just happened with 14 and 15. And I think it is a bonus that the game is uber simple. Uber basic, and that 15 almost messes it up, right? But throwing too hard at 14, oh, it just gets a little bit too into the game. Maybe that puts the toy maker off his game, you know, as it were, because he's saying, "Oh, well, this is easy." Like, you know, like it's a little bit hubris. He's actually like, "Oh, well, they're just going to destroy each other now." So I get that.
Yeah.
What did you think of the setting up of the one player that the toy maker says he didn't dare face, the one who waits, clearly setting something up for Shooty's first season? What did you think of that?
Yeah, obviously it's going to be some kind of big bad. That's most certainly the boss that Meep was talking about.
Yeah. Not the toy maker after all.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be foreshadowing something big. I hope it's something new. In that, you know, we've seen Omega, we haven't seen Omega in the new series, but we've seen all kinds of classic Doctor Who villains brought back. But I also feel like this break between Gatwa and Tennant, a lot of it sort of implies that Gatwa is the memories, but without the baggage. And without really understanding how that works, I kind of like that thematically. Like, clearly, Russell T. Davies is going, okay, it's Doctor Who year one. And let's go and do that. So I hope they start building some new lore here and figuring out what this new universe with Shuri Gatwa is like. You can bring back stuff, but I think the idea of bringing back stuff, I don't know, it's kind of getting a little old. And again, like that seems to be a thing that Big Finish is doing a lot. And there's all this multiverse stuff that's been happening the last few years in various franchises. It's time for clean slates, you know, and I want a clean slate. Let's start again. And I'm not saying never bring anyone back, but let's, you know, they're giving the Cybermen and Daleks a rest for a reason. Let's kind of give the, I wouldn't say nostalgia a rest for a reason, but let's start building new adventures. That's my view.
Not to say that you're not correct, because of course you are right. Everyone's right. All of opinions are correct at the moment. However, late breaking news from the RTD commentary that people have been checking out while we've been on the air. What we think happens, and I haven't actually listened to the commentary myself, but here's the suggestion from Twitter, which I will never call X, because I'm correct. At the moment when 14 regenerated, every single incarnation bioregenerated. So every incarnation in the past was reborn. They all get their own timelines. Possible multiverse? ? Now, there are other commenters suggesting that RTD is joking when he said that, but yeah, I mean, should we?
The guy's out of control, bro. The thing is, you don't need it. Doctor Who's already got multi-doctor stories and et cetera, and all this stuff. Okay. Anyway, I don't even want to talk about that.
We'll find out in time.
So, yeah, I mean, other things I would say, like, okay, so there's the stuff with the whole wheelchair access and the TARDIS and the references. To, I forget her name. What's that character's name? Whatever her name is.
Scientific advisor? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was played fairly well in the Star Beast, in that here she is, she's in a wheelchair and she's just there and she's in charge. And yes, that does become a little bit of the story in that episode, but that all made sense. Here, I felt like, okay, they were just making too many references to it. Like, it's kind of like, just have her there. Have her be in the story, have her be competent and cool. Stop like making her the person in the wheelchair. You know what I mean? Like, I did not like that. I think this was story did not serve her character well.
And she's also has to carry the water for like all political correctness, right? Everyone keeps telling her to be like, can I say parked? You know, Donna has that line.
And it's kind of like Davies is trying to have his cake and eat it too, because he's making fun of cancel culture and online outrage mobs, but he's also, you know, doing this incredibly political correct thing that I know he's not specifically catering to that crowd. I mean, I do think he's genuinely trying to do good things here, but it is like sort of playing into that whole world. And it's like, it's again, representation is great. Have a character be in a wheelchair, have her be competent and cool. Like, you don't have to keep referring to the thing, you know, just have her be there. It's enough. That's how you really, you know, be representative, in my view.
You need someone there to say the sciencey things about exactly what is going on with the giggle. I've got to say, if the giggle's been burned into every screen, which I love as an idea, by the way, but like, let us also not forget that every screen since 1969 has been broadcasting the silence.
When you're playing the moon landing, wow, what if you're playing the moon landing on an Earth screen?
Yes.
And you're just hearing, why does that laugh that Neil Armstrong said after one small step for man?
that's why they had to fuzz that bit out. I'm sure we'll get that story eventually. I really liked it all. I'm always on tenterhooks in these moments of like, are they, how far is RTG going to go? Is it going to get it basically right? Is it going to feel basically right? I think this did. And I think that also there has been a fine long history of Doctor Who talking about itself in the context of television, like as a stand-in for television. You know, we've seen it directly in The Idiot's Lantern. We saw it directly here. But you could make the argument that it's all over the place, you know, and that Doctor Who is itself sort of, from the start, an example of what television can do and what it does do to us and our brains and all of the fears that come from it. This is perhaps more direct than I've ever seen. Now, let me ask you a question, Pete. Had you heard before this the name John Logie Baird?
I had not. Or so, if I had, I'd forgotten about it.
John Logie Baird is the inventor of television, and Philo T. Farnsworth, a name you probably heard, is the inventor of television. This is and it's kind of perfect for the giggle, right? Because the Americans are right, Philo T. Farnsworth invented television, and the Brits are right, John Logie Baird invented television. Like, they both did different bits of it at different times, and it's a very complicated, entangled history. And I've long wondered about this, because it's like, it was so weird coming to America as a Brit to discover, you know, oh, you guys all venerate this Philo T. Farnsworth guy. What's up with that? Have you never heard of John Logie Baird? Like, he always gets
who got to the patent office first? That's what I want to know.
Well, it depends what you're patenting, right? I think that's the I haven't had time to look into the history of it. When we do the giggle for real in the pool to open random adventure, I will certainly have history corner. On who is the correct one. But it's one of those disputes that just, you know, I remember reading about it and I think, oh, well, this ultimately has no answer. And ultimately it's a bit sort of, you know, it's patriotic, it's nationalistic, it's whoever you want it to be. Do you want it to be the Scot or do you want it to be the American? You know, that there's cause to say that they're both, which is perfect for a world in which, you know, everyone could be right, everyone could believe their own thing, and in which the what's her name, the American TV reporter that we got from RTD's early years is now basically hosting InfoWars Alex Jones show, in which she's screaming
in real life, you mean? Yeah.
Oh, no, in the giggle, like we got out of her. She's like, we're not going to wear the, what was it called?
Oh, that was her. Yes. Oh my God. I didn't even get that.
Yes. She was
right. We're not the Z-Dex. Oh yeah. Like, yes. What was with that? So Unit has its own robot artificial intelligence thing, which I guess kind of makes sense.
Yep.
But I also felt like, I felt like there was kind of one too many things there. I have to say, it's like, hey, we've got Mel, we've got Kate Stewart, we got the robot thing, and now the doctor and Donna show up, and now Donna can type really fast, so she's helpful. It's like, okay, like there's one, someone's got to leave here. Like, it's great everyone's here, but you know, like I don't think there's just enough for everyone to do.
So, yeah, it's a common problem, and certainly one that Chris Chibnall ran into a lot. I think handled pretty well here. Like, I feel if it was Chimple, he would have thrown in another companion working at Unit, and we would have even more of a division of labor, and he just sort of keep splitting them and splitting them and splitting them, like the toy maker talks about splitting the doctor endlessly, which I thought was a wonderful idea, and kind of want to see him come back and do that.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, the special effect of the beam going through Tennant there was really good. I thought that was pretty awesome. Just sort of having him kind of like zap through and sort of suspended a little bit.
And what's interesting is he basically dies the same way, or, you know, the regeneration is forced in the same way as Jodie's was. You know, pretty much the same kind of, you know, big laser weapon, big gun.
Yeah.
Which is sort of also an interesting maybe meta commentary on the idea of, like, you know, this is what happened. Like, the show's kind of run out of ideas. And like the 14 is sort of an example of the show resting on its laurels and going back to its looking backwards rather than forwards.
Right. You know?
And so I think it's perfect for that regeneration to happen in exactly the same way. It's like, oh, I guess we're just going to do this again. And then to fake us out and give us a new kind of thing that everyone's going to argue about.
Well, we're definitely going to be arguing about that jukebox. Tell you that. Is it digital? Does it have records? I feel like it's cool. It's again, it's one of those just magic things. The hammer doesn't just split the TARDIS, it gives one of them a jukebox.
That's right.
It's like, you know, why not?
Yeah, after Shooty has snuck in on his own, and he's like, you know, and Tennant follows him, by that time, he has already, you know, changed the lighting system and installed a jukebox. He's basically turned it into Ken's Mojo Dojo Daka House, whatever it was from Barbie. Shout out to Shooty Gotwa for being in that as well. Yeah, wow. I you know, there's so much we could talk about. We could keep going for hours.
We could keep going
about this, but any final thoughts before we post this quick?
One thing that just Davies has single-handedly with the Star Beast and now the Giggle destroyed a lot of non-canon or extra-canonical stuff. So it's clear that this toy maker has never encountered the Doctor since the Celestial toy maker. Oh, by the way, I did really like that, you know, we could be Celestials, which I thought was amazing, and using sort of what I would argue is the correct use of the term, which the Marvel Universe also does, right? Because they call their super galactic super beings Celestials. And it was a great little reference.
And by the way, if you're just catching up on Pull to Open, first of all, go watch our Celestial Toy Maker podcast where we went at the beginning of the year. And that's where I found out that Celestial was kind of used as a slur against Chinese people. You know, it had multiple meanings. The combination of it and Michael Goff's outfit was what sort of led people to think, oh, well, maybe this
maybe it's at the very least insensitive.
Yes.
You know, which again, I think I really like that he's an insensitive character deliberately. I think that's super fun. But like, again, there was...
did his accent as well, by the way. He started to sound a little Michael Goff-ish.
He did.
Absolutely. In some moments, which was kind of nice.
So, but it obviously invalidates the Nightmare Fair, divided loyalties, all the comics, which again, who cares? But it's a...
Who cares?
Well, I mean, I think you could probably contort something to do with continuity and sort of still include them all in the same way that, like, hey, human nature, maybe it happened twice. Who knows?
What did you think, by the way, about the sort of the maybe too obvious reveal that the whole thing with the salt last week in Mild Blue Yonder is the reason that the toy maker's in our universe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. I think we all called it. I think it's one of those things where it's not like you're trying to mislead anyone or tease anything. It's a bit, oh yeah, this goes from there to here. Because you need something to explain where he went, like where's he been all this time. And it does make sense, right? Because in the original adventure, he goes to the toy maker's realm. The toy maker is never really in the universe. So this opening that gateway, you know, carves the path to having this adventure, and also sort of answers the question of why didn't you just go right after him and haven't encountered him since he was, again, very much, much younger, as I think 14 says at one point, which is always like always fun to think of William Hartnell as the young one.
Yes. Yes. Something else 14 says at one point is that he's a billion years old. Now, is he being literal or... I mean, there's an argument that he could be talking about heaven sent, right? Adding all that time.
How would he know?
Yeah,
he has no idea how old he is. I think he's just throwing a number out there. And you could argue heaven sent, but I don't think that holds much water just because he's recreated every time. So, you know, he didn't age a billion years. Well, yeah,
not unless 14 has had way more adventures than we knew about. That may not be the Doctor's new official age.
That the legacy of the Daleks took way longer than an hour, it turns out. All right, so we'll save other commentary about this for when the randomizer actually brings us here. But folks, look forward to our next Pull to Open in the regular sequence. Where we're going to talk... What are we going to talk about? I actually completely forgot.
Talk about A Christmas Carol.
That's what it is.
Which, my goodness, the randomizer has taken us there. So glad... You can kind of look back at what the randomizer has been doing and see that it set us up for the giggle. But we will get to that when we talk about why the randomizer did what it did next week in The Christmas Carol. And we'll probably have some more giggle thoughts by that time as well. So... keep it right here at Pull to Open. We'll also be doing special quick reaction on Christmas Day. The Church on Ruby Road, the Christmas episode, Pete. I gotta say, I don't know if I can officially say this, but I have seen a trailer, not the BBC trailer, the Disney Plus trailer. I've seen it ahead of time.
Oh my.
It's exciting. Yeah. Stuff happens. And
you sure that wasn't the church on Sapphire Road?
Yeah, it's the next road over.
Yeah.
That is confused. It's by a generation, like it's happening all everywhere simultaneously in every road with a crystal in its name. So yeah, come back for Christmas Carol.
Do that, and don't forget to check us out on youtube.com/pulltoopen. Like and subscribe, and we will see you next time. We'll be right back.